Welcome to A Touch of Gray. My name is Vicki Duke, and I'm your volunteer broadcaster. The literature of AARP, both the bulletin and the magazine, and I am coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona. We are in the magazine this week in America Turns 250. It's an article celebrating the people, places, and things we love about this nation. In the first section, Amazing Artifacts, True Tales of U.S. History. The stories behind seven enshrined museum pieces. Museums are hallowed places where we house items so that future generations will learn how we lived. And it's those lives, the connections to real humans, that make these pieces important. We track down some people to tell the stories behind some of the personal effects at prominent American museums, all as told to Michael Grant. Medal of Honor, Staff Sergeant Walter David Ehlers, a Kansas native, served throughout World War II, including on D-Day. On June 9th and 10th, 1944, he performed acts of heroism near Gouville, France, that earned him a Medal of Honor. Though wounded himself, the citation reads, he carried his wounded automatic rifleman to safety and then returned fearlessly over the shell-swept field to retrieve the automatic rifle, which he was unable to carry previously. Ehlers' Medal of Honor is at the National World War II Museum in New Orleans. Ehlers died in 2014. His daughter, Kathy Ehlers Metcalf, 69, of Orange, California, regularly visits the museum. Seeing the medal at the museum touches my heart. During his medal ceremony, during his Medal of Honor action, he was shot in the side and the bullet ricocheted off a rib, went out through his pack, and shot a hole in the side of his mother's picture. That picture is in the museum with the Medal of Honor. On the 50th anniversary of D-Day, he delivered the keynote address on Omaha Beach. He mentioned that they didn't just fight for the cause or for the people, they fought for the life they left behind and the life they hope to return to. I feel that the museum gives me a sense of recognition for what Dad and his family did to secure the freedom we still relish in this country. Dad said the Medal of Honor actions happen in context. Part of the reason he was so determined to keep his story in context was that it was also his older brother's story. Dad was able, with the help of a beach master, to get his whole platoon safely off the beach on D-Day. By contrast, Roland's landing craft was hit by a mortar, and he and other men were killed. My dad always felt that his brother was truly a hero who made the full measure of sacrifice. Next, we have the Super Bowl 14 game ball. On January 20th, 1980, the Pittsburgh Steelers won their fourth Super Bowl, becoming the first NFL team to achieve that milestone at a time when football was cementing its position as America's favorite sport. A ball from that game is now part of the collection of the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History, although it is not currently displayed. Hall of Fame quarterback Terry Bradshaw, 77, who played for 14 seasons with the Steelers and is now a broadcaster for Fox NFL Sunday, was unaware of the ball's enshrinement. That football represents the closing of a decade when a group of men stayed together for about 10 years and won 4 Super Bowls. That was our last Super Bowl together. That is the combination of all that. So it is extremely rewarding. But I say we did this, not I did this. I'm just one of 53 players who were part of the ball being in there. So that's what I'm proud of. Winning 4 Super Bowls was special. Now looking back, here comes Joe Montana and he wins 4. Then comes Tom Brady and he wins 7, but he lost 3. 7 minus 3 is 4. That's the way I like to look at it. I'm not going to give anybody the upper hand. Next, we have Evel Knievel's motorcycle. Evel Knievel was America's first superstar daredevil. Known for his death-defying motorcycle stunts, his customized 1972 Harley-Davidson XR750 in the collection of the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History was used in some of his most famous jumps, including a successful flight over 14 buses that was nationally televised on ABC's Wide World of Sports on October 25, 1975. His oldest son, Kelly, 65, witnessed many of his father's risky stunts. I've always been proud of my dad. He wasn't the easiest man to grow up with, but you don't become a world-famous daredevil by being a shrinking violet. My dad's accomplishments are a reflection of the freedom and spirit of America. If you follow his career, even after he crashes, he gets up and jumps even farther the next time. That's what made him so popular, his courage, his confidence in himself, his originality, and his showmanship. No one had ever seen anyone like Evel Knievel before. At the time, in the early 70s, I think motorcycles were more associated with outlaws and gangs like the Hells Angels. Today, motorcycle culture is more of an expression of freedom and individualism. I think my dad was the turning point between the bad guys and the good guys. With that red, white, and blue outfit he wore, the fact that he had the highest rated Wild World of Sports show in history is just a testament to how he had the whole country sitting on the edge of their seats waiting to see what he would do next. Look at all the people he has inspired. Freestyle motocross riders, racers, extreme sports enthusiasts. He created a new industry, and it's still going today. Not a single person in these sports doesn't credit Evel Knievel for it, and he definitely deserves it. The next item is the Shawnee Dushto hair ornament. As the first American's Museum in Oklahoma City prepared to return some items on loan from the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian, it asked artist Heidi Big Knife to create a contemporary piece to replace the dashto, a type of hair ornament worn by the Shawnee. The original was created sometime between 1870 and 1900. Big Knife's version is made of maple wood, cotton calico, glass seed beads, silk ribbon, wool broadcloth, sterling silver, brain tanned hide, and embroidery floss. The dashto is worn during ceremonial dancing. The hourglass shape, to me, represents the earth and the universe. When we're dancing, we are in a relationship with those two things. When I made this piece, I thought about different designs, but I landed on illustrating things that relate to my ceremonial ground. It's got oak leaves on it because our ceremonial ground is called white oak. It has a tiny pendant hanging from it, a little dogwood flower, which is significant to my grounds. I don't know the person who made the original piece, but making this made me feel more connected to my ancestors and my heritage. The Smithsonian's object was collected about 1910, and then to see that they're still being made, that's important. People who roll in off Route 66 see that Native people are still living, the cultures are still alive, and languages are still being spoken. Maybe they will be able to see some of these objects are spiritually significant, just as one might find significance viewing objects in other religious contexts. The dashto represents Shawnee culture. The Shawnee have been building community on this continent since time immemorial. And our history, culture, and people embody the lived experience of what is now called America. The next item is a U.S. Air Force flight helmet. U.S. Air Force Colonel James E. Randall lost his helmet on October 13, 1965. When his F-105 Thunder Chief was shot down near Dien Bien Phu, Vietnam. It was later found in a Vietnamese flea market and returned to him. In recent years, Wish of a Lifetime from AARP, an organization that works to fulfill the dreams of older Americans, helped get the helmet accepted into the collection of the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture, along with Randall's Purple Heart and other items. Randall, a member of the legendary Tuskegee Airmen, who had a 36-year military career that included combat missions in two wars, died in 2019. His widow, Essie, passed this year. His daughter, Roberta Rollins, shares her father's story. In August 2013, they presented my dad with his helmet at the Tuskegee Airmen Convention in St. Louis. He brought it home and had a cabinet built. Before my father passed away, he said he wanted the helmet to go to the African American Museum. It was important to him because there isn't much memorabilia left of the Tuskegee Airmen. My dad fought for his country during a time when African Americans couldn't even vote. He faced racism, but he persevered. I have never been prouder of my dad than I am now. And that's the end of that article. Next, we have 14 older Americans who made an impact, like AARP founder Dr. Ethel Percy Andrus, by Katya Singel. Benjamin Franklin, from 1706 to 1790. The oldest founding father, he was key to the U.S. victory over Britain. Starting in 1776 at age 70, he used his diplomatic skills to forge a critical military alliance with France. Noah Webster is next, 1758 to 1843, a teacher, clerk, newspaper editor, and lawyer. He wrote a comprehensive American dictionary, which he published at age 70. It promoted uniformity in how Americans spoke and spelled. Sojourner Truth is next, 1797 to 1883. A former enslaved person, she became a leading voice for human rights in her mid-50s after delivering an important speech at the 1851 Women's Rights Convention in Ohio. Clara Barton, 1821 to 1912. In 1881, at age 59, she established the American Association of the Red Cross, one of the country's most prominent humanitarian organizations and a supplier of blood. Andrew Carnegie, 1835 to 1919, he used his fortune to create libraries, universities, and foundations. In his 70s, he established the Carnegie Corporation of New York, which supported the discovery of insulin. Grandma Moses is next. Artist Anna Mary Robertson Moses held her first solo show in 1940 at the age of 80. When she was 88, President Harry S. Truman presented her with an award for her work. Laura Ingalls Wilder, 1867 to 1957. The author wasn't published until age 65, with her first Little House novel in 1932. The series went on to sell more than 73 million copies and spawn a hit TV show. Inez Mexia's important work as a botanist began at age 55. In her 13-year career, she collected more than 150,000 plant specimens, 500 of which were newly discovered species. General George C. Marshall, 1880 to 1959. At 58, he became U.S. Army Chief of Staff. Marshall was the Allies' organizer of victory in World War II, then developed the post-war European Recovery Program. Ray Kroc, 1902 through 1984, as fast food's founding father, Kroc began franchising McDonald's at age 52, launching an empire that has grown to more than 45,000 restaurants in over 100 nations. And finally, we have Grace Hopper, 1906 through 1992. Beginning in 1959 at the age of 52, she helped develop the computer programming language COBOL. The code still supports an estimated $3 trillion in financial transactions a day. Julia Child, 1912 to 2004. In 1963, at age 50, she launched the cooking series The French Chef on public television, helping everyday Americans elevate their culinary skills by breaking complex methods into simple steps. Child added beef bourguignon and ratatouille to palates accustomed to meatloaf. Larry Itliong, 1913 to 1977. In 1965, when Itliong was in his early 50s, he launched the Delano grape strike in California, a five-year action that resulted in increased pay and improved conditions for farm workers. The strike also led to the formation of the United Farm Workers Union. John B. Goodenough, 1922 to 2023. This American inventor was the oldest person to win a Nobel Prize at 97. The prize in chemistry came for Goodenough's breakthrough work in his late 50s, developing lithium-ion batteries, which power laptop computers, mobile phones, and electric vehicles. So I will continue with the items that have found their way to the American History Museum. Next, we have Fonzie's leather jacket. Few articles of clothing embody cool quite like the Fonzie's leather jacket from the ABC sitcom Happy Days, portrayed by Henry Winkler, now 80, during the show's 11-season run in the 1970s and 80s. Arthur Fonzarelli was TV's most popular character on one of the era's most popular shows. One of the jackets used on the show is part of the collection at the Smithsonian National Museum of American History. I got a call from Gary Nardino, the president of Paramount Television. He said, "The Smithsonian would like to have your jacket. When you're first asked, it's an honor, but the breadth and depth are not fully comprehended. As you go through life, it becomes this gigantic compliment. The original was a beat-up bomber jacket that was stolen from the costumes department at Paramount after the show's first year. Then they made five and stored them in a vault. Two of those jackets are still in my closet. I think the jacket represents external toughness. The jacket is instantaneously recognizable as, oh, I would give that human being space. I would arrive on set at 12 on Friday and have my hair combed into a ducktail. I got ready for dress rehearsal with the t-shirt and the boots. Then I put on the jacket and the character was complete. I never wore the leather jacket as myself. I couldn't live up to the character. He was bigger than real life. One time, I went to see the jacket at the Smithsonian. I didn't have a camera, so I waited by the case. A family came by, and I said, I know this is crazy, but I'm going to ask you to take a picture of me with the jacket. I'm going to give you my address, and you're going to send it to me. They knew who I was, but they looked at me like I was crazy. I hope that when people see the jacket, they think that even though the Fonz was supposed to be tough, his humanity always shines through. As the character, I never hit anyone. I never used a weapon. It's the strength of a human being that convinces both the good and the bad to do the right thing. Next, we have NASA Viking 75 poster. Artist John Lomberg, 77, designed this poster for NASA's 1975 Viking project, the first U.S. mission to land a spacecraft on the surface of Mars. As a frequent collaborator with Carl Sagan, Lomberg produced images and helped us visualize what the universe looked like. He won an Emmy Award for his artistic work on the PBS show Cosmos, served as a consultant on the movie Contact, and created illustrations for Sagan's books. Space has always been my thing. As a child, the question was always, why isn't everybody interested? Some people are born to play soccer or play the cello. I think I was born with a love of space. And that's the end of that article and the end of our time together today. I want to thank you so much for listening to my show, A Touch of Gray. Again, my name is Vicki Duke, and I am coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.